Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at Viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at RaymondJames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. World War II is underway, and Europe is on fire. A German invasion of Norway has splintered the royal family, with the king and crown prince hiding in Norway, while Crown Princess Martha and her children flee to Sweden.
But this is Swedish territory.
Martha, until a few days ago, no one believed Norway or Denmark would be attacked.
You must leave.
But Martha's homeland is no safer than the country she left behind. The Crown Princess's Swedish family refuses to shelter her, leaving her with little choice but to look to America.
The passenger ship is anchored in the bay, so a small boat will take us out there. The Lunde family. Now, I've heard there are many Norwegian fishermen here. Best to keep your head down so you don't get recognized. Mm. We don't want the Germans to know you're on board.
I never thought that if I did another Atlantic crossing, it would be as a refugee.
As a group of Norwegian fishermen proudly salute their future king, Prince Harald, Martha and her children board a ship for their own Atlantic crossing and head into the next chapter of their lives and the war. As the Crown Princess Martha, Swedish actor Sofia Hallen is uniquely suited for the little-known story of this quiet leader, and Hallen joins us to discuss finding her own voice in the wake of the Swedish Me Too movement, the relationship between Martha and FDR, and her star-making turn as Detective Saga Norén in the international hit The Bridge. And we are joined this week by Atlantic Crossing star Sofia Hallen. Welcome.
Thank you.
The central figure in Atlantic Crossing is the Crown Princess Martha, who is not a figure known to most Americans. As she was originally from Sweden, were you aware at all of her story before coming on board the project?
No, I had never heard of her, even though she was Swedish and all the things she did and everything. I'd never heard of her before.
You joined Atlantic Crossing early on during the screenwriting process, in fact. How involved were you in terms of working with the screenwriters to shape the narrative or Martha's character arc?
Yeah, the writers, they went to America to find out more about her personal life and about her romantic relationship maybe to Roosevelt. But what they found was more evidence of her political life and actions. So when we had those facts, we had to try to get closer to her as a person and try to find out her main struggle as a human being. So that's something that we discussed a lot. They found somewhere where she said about speaking in public that she really hated that. She said, you know, I'd rather make a surgery again than speak in public again. So she really hated talking before many people and before camera. So that was like a piece of the puzzle to get to make a human being out of her, because royalties, they never shared their letters or personal memories from their relatives, from someone outside the family. So we couldn't get to know her intimate parts of her personality. So we had to make that up a bit. But we knew some things about her, like that she was a very mild and sympathetic person. So up on that, we built, her story and her struggle.
You mentioned the fact that she didn't like to speak in public. We've seen many World War II dramas, but Atlantic Crossing takes a very different approach. This is the story of a woman finding her voice in both a literal and figurative way. How important to you was it to see this woman as being truly groundbreaking, a princess turned refugee, finding the strength to speak up for what she needed?
Yeah, of course, I wanted this story to be about all women and about all women in history who are forgotten, even though they did achieve great things. So to find that piece of the puzzle where she actually said, she had said that she's so afraid of speaking in public made it easier to develop that journey, that to help her to come out of her comfort zone and dare to do things that she normally wouldn't do in honor of her country and in the sake of peace and democracy.
You've had to do that in reality as well with your role in the Swedish Me Too movement. How did that experience help shape your journey to finding your own voice and speaking up?
Yeah, it's very strange that these two projects, or if I can call Me Too a project, worked simultaneously. And it is absolutely about finding your own voice. And I think that's what's happening with many women around the world. I just learned that Me Too has changed things in over 100 countries for women. So that was like a magical synchronicity that this happened at the same time.
How challenging was it to construct the character of Martha? And was the process similar or different to what you did to construct the character of Saga Norén on Bronn?
I'm always trying to find the struggle within the character I'm going to do. So with Saga Norén, it was like the opposite, that she didn't know how to behave around people and how to read people and so on. With Martha, it's the other way around. She's very good at reading people and adapt to situations and so on. And she's more put in a shape from the beginning of her life. I live in Stockholm and she grew up here at the Royal Castle, and she went to school in the Royal Castle, and the way she were taught to be as a young princess is, I don't think that's a very big space to move in. I think you have to behave in a very certain way and to move your body in a certain way. So I worked with, you know, trying to always have the S curve in my body and try to be very pleasant all the time, because I think that's what she's been trained for, to be pleasant. So it was surprisingly challenging to you know, have these glamorous clothes and to be in this nice shape all the time. You know, I got thoughts about crazy things I wanted to do because I felt trapped in that shape, you know. And that made me think about many women in the past who have been stuck in a shape or have tried to be something that they naturally aren't.
Martha helped to shift public opinion about the war and even stood by FDR's side when he delivered his famous Look to Norway speech. Why do you think that Martha has until now remained a forgotten female war hero? Why didn't she end up in history books the way her male counterparts during the war did?
I answer with a question: who writes the history? I had to look it up. I mean, how many professors do we have in the university in the Nordic countries? It's still like 70% just male professors, and so it's still a problem. But we are getting better. But of course, I don't think it might have even occurred to her that her story would be famous or that she would be thanked in any way. Because I don't think that's the female part of that time. That's not the expectation. But I know that one ambassador in Washington just after the war said about Martha, he said, "What Martha did and achieved during the war is something that the world is going to talk a lot about in the future." and especially Norway then, he meant. But that didn't happen. And that's interesting.
You're a native speaker of Swedish. Alexander Eich told us that you had to learn Norwegian for this role, among many other things. Was that challenging on top of building a character?
I like languages, and I'm doing it like for fun also. So it's not that I studied. It's more like I just tried to do it. So I had a Norwegian teacher, and we talked on the phone for 1 hour every day for months. And so I said, okay, hi, I'm going to go shopping now. So can you come with me? I will talk Norwegian on the way. So then you can correct me when I say things wrong. So that's the way I learned. And it was very fun. And also, it's not like if you would learn Norwegian, because Swedish and Norwegian is similar.
Yeah, it would be far more challenging, I think, coming from English than another Scandinavian language. Martha and Olav's early goodwill tour takes them to the White House, where they meet Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt before the war. Given how integral Franklin would become to Martha's life, what do you think she made of FDR on their first meeting?
What I've learned is that was like the most romantic trip they've had in their lives, and that it was a great success. On every level, and that they became friends with Roosevelt. So obviously they must have been very impressed by him and by America, and as you are when you're on a very good place, you're in a good place, then you feel like you love everything around you. I guess that's what it must have been like. I mean, there were photos while they were riding horses and meeting all kinds of different things in America that must have been very exotic to them. And also the King Olaf, he said that was maybe the happiest time of their lives.
Even as Olaf tries to shield Martha and his children, Martha realizes that war is on her doorstep, going so far as to ask the American ambassador, Florence Harriman, about what's actually going on.
Madam Ambassador.
Your Highness.
I need to ask you, have you received any reports from the American intelligence? I mean, regarding a threat of a German invasion. Olaf fears it could happen, but our government seems to be more concerned about a British invasion.
Oh, believe me, Your Highness. No one hopes more than I that Norway is spared from this war.
Please, if there is anything you know, anything.
Well, in times of war, steel is more precious than gold, so as long as most of Germany's iron has to pass through Norway, yes, there's a risk of invasion.
Please, Madam Ambassador, is it imminent?
Prepare for the worst.
Even at this rather formal and elegant event that she's at, how attuned is Martha to what's happening around her?
In our version, she's not aware of everything that is happening. And I guess it was more like that the men and the government were only men, and the king and the prince were men. So I guess she got to learn everything from Olaf by then. But no one knew what was going to happen. It was even though the threat was there, no one knew that it would really happen, that the Germans would invade them, and how it was a complete shock for them.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors. Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. Martha and the Norwegian royal family begin a rather risky escape rather than remaining behind in Norway. Do you feel that they escaped certain death by going into exile, by removing themselves from the country?
Probably, or they would have been in prison. But I don't know, because it depends on, I think, in Denmark, for instance, they gave up much easier, and their king or their royalties didn't get killed. So, but of course, there was, if they would have made resistance, their lives would definitely have been threatened.
There's intense tension, I'll say, to these escape scenes on the train and elsewhere. How challenging were these escape scenes to film, given the danger that the royals and the children were in?
It's hard to even imagine to be in a train. And they also had to separate the family in order to not risk you that everyone's going to be killed if a bomb would hit the train. So to just imagine to not be with your kids when you know that there are bombs falling on the ground around you, I can't imagine. It's an absolute horror.
Martha's determination to get to her own homeland of Sweden means she won't stop for anyone, as she says, ordering her driver to drive through the barricade at the border of Sweden. There's a real grimness to her in this moment that is surprising from what we've seen of her thus far. What did this scene reveal about her true inner nature to you?
In my view, it's her survival spirit comes forward, and I think you don't survive those circumstances if you don't have a very big fighting spirit within you. Because I imagine many people would have been just shocked, and I don't know if I would have been able to think or do anything. Just, you know, you can freeze by shock or fear. And it's, to me, it also is the moment where you, because she's so well behaved and so nice all the time and so soft and pleasant, but that's a moment where the animal comes out in her.
Martha hopes to find safety in Sweden under the protection of her uncle, King Gustav. But Gustav is in his own precarious position with Germany, and he tries to convince Martha to return to Norway. Is he trying to save his own skin by sacrificing his niece and her children? What's his sort of game here?
Yeah, it's very known in Sweden and in Norway that he was quite friendly with the Germans, because his wife was also German. Even though I know he went down to Hitler in the 30s and said to Hitler in Berlin that you mustn't treat the Jews like you are treating them. This isn't right. But even though he did that, he was very German friendly. And I think that he was so afraid of the Bolsheviks that he was just focusing on that threat. And didn't see the scale of his betrayal at that time. I guess, unless he was a psychopath. But of course, many people in Norway are still very disappointed with that behavior.
FDR, of course, proposes sending a ship for Martha and the children to take them to the States and out of harm's way in Europe. What does America represent to Martha at this point?
It must have been a relief to get to go to a free country, but it must have been so scary to go overseas at that time. I mean, the sea was full of submarines and mines and so on. So I think once she got to America, it must have been a great relief. But also it must have been very hard to leave the family, to leave her mother, her brother, father, relatives, and she didn't know if she would ever come back and see them again.
Martha delivers my favorite line of this episode. She says, "It's more important for a country to protect its soul than to protect the peace." What do you feel she means by this, and how significant is this a statement for her?
we know that within the Swedish royal family, there were very different opinions on how to treat the Germans. So that Martha's father, mother and father, they were very anti-Germany. Whilst Gustav wasn't. So this is a point where she actually stands up for her point, what her opinion is.
And to me, this is sort of the first step she's taken towards finding her sense of self. You know, this decision that she's going to sail to America. Did you see this as a major turning point for Martha as a character, that she makes this statement that she has, I have made my decision?
Yes, it is the first step of her own journey where she understands that I can't just rely on what other people want me to do or feels or thinks. I have to make my own decisions and go for it. So that's where it starts. But I don't think at all she is picturing herself doing all the things she later did at that point. But it's the start.
I want to talk about my favorite scene from the episode. Florence Harriman warns Martha to keep a low profile, as she'll be recognized by Norwegian fishermen as she leaves. But instead, she proudly and tearfully shows off Prince Harald to his countrymen as the fishermen sing the Norwegian anthem.
Be prinsen!
Se mor! Norske flagg!
Hurra for Prins Harald!
Hurra for Prins Harald!
Hurra for Prins Harald!
Hurra for Prins Harald!
What did you make of this very emotional scene, and what was it like to film?
What is interesting to know is that Norway and its royal house were at that point a democracy. The royal house was chosen by the people. So for me, it stands not for, you know, the prince and king to be, but it also stands for what the people wanted. So when she raises Harald in front of these seamen, it's more showing that I'm with you. This is not me running away from you. I'm with you. We are. So that was an important gesture from her, and we know that she did that.
Is it true you wanted to be a doctor when you grew up? What made you seek out acting instead?
Yeah, I wanted to be a doctor when I was a child. I spent a lot of time in hospital because I suffered from severe asthma. So I think that was one of the reasons I wanted to become a doctor. But my artistic side took over quite when I got older. So it wasn't a choice for me when I was a teenager. I was not focusing on being a doctor anymore.
You played the incredible Saga Noren on Bronn, The Bridge, one of my favorite all-time shows, for four incredible seasons. When you first signed on for that first series, did you anticipate the enormous response that Saga would receive from the audience?
No, not at all. I actually turned it down because it was just when the girl with the dragon tattoo was so big, and that was also a female hero with kind of Asperger symptom. And so I thought, what a crime, another crime series about this kind of female hero. But then I got to know the script better and the people who worked with it, and that persuaded me. So, and I was also, my children were so small at that time. So I was totally unprepared. So I remember I went to London to deliver a prize at some gala, and I was just surprised for being invited. But I went, and then I got into the room, and everybody just started talking to me about The Bridge. And I was completely surprised.
Saga opened the door for a new type of portrayal of characters on TV, particularly characters with Asperger's syndrome, but also characters that can be seen in a sort of deeply feminist lens. Did you see her as being revolutionary in that respect once you had signed on?
Yeah, I always have the feministic lens. I cannot take it off. So any part I do, I see it through those eyes. And of course, also with Saga. But what I didn't know before I started being her, I didn't know how liberating it will be to just say what you think all the time. And also I got to, you know, there's a scene where she's just saying by the coffee table at work that, you know, I had my period this morning. And that's something that, you know, came up in the moment. And I asked the director, can I say that? Sure, say it. So it was very liberating. Yeah.
How closely did you work with Charlotte Seeling to come up with the overall look and style of Saga's now iconic costuming, those leather trousers or the military coat? How closely did you work with Charlotte?
We just kept on trying things. And I remember that because I came in clogs to the rehearsal and she just like, she's got to have a heel like that. So we found shoes with that heel. And quite early on, we found the leather trousers. But then it was actually out of sort of a mistake that she had the same clothes over and over again. It was like someone in the costume department forgot to change my T-shirt. And then we decided, but she has the same T-shirt. So we said, we put with her T-shirt like that in her drawer and just keep it there so she can change that work. So that's, for instance, something that me and Charlotte came up together with in the moment. And that was so wonderful with that collaboration with Charlotte and also with the writer, that they were so open to the impulses. And since they were open, we enjoyed it and we had a lot of fun with it.
How did playing Saga change you as an actor and as a person?
As I said, it's that I've done Saga has left traces within my personality, that I can hear what she would say in a situation where I just am polite and, you know, adapting to people and so on. So that in that sense, she's affected me. But of course, it's also given me opportunities work-wise a lot. But it also helps me understanding people who I previously just said, oh, that's an idiot. I don't want to talk to him or her. I now realize, oh, maybe she or he doesn't know how to understand what I'm doing. Because I remember when I got into the part as Saga, it was like going behind a glass wall. I found that out when I stood before a glass wall and I started knocking, and I realized that's what it must be, to just trying to get through, but you see, but you can't get through. So I guess I understand that a little bit better now.
This podcast episode is coming out after episode 2 of Atlantic Crossing. What can you tease about what's coming up?
You're going to get to know another side of FDR when Martha finally reaches the White House. And you're also going to get to know the more private meetings between FDR and Martha. And you're also going to follow her journey, to find her voice, and to her journey to dare to tell people her opinion and raise her voice.
Sophia Halen, tack så mycket.
Ja, tack så mycket.
Just like the Crown Princess, we're looking to FDR for help. That is, for our next episode.
You make me relax, my dear. And I appreciate that.
Likewise.
If there's anything you need to make this easier for you and the children, don't hesitate to ask.
Kyle MacLachlan plays the powerful American president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and he joins us here on the podcast on April 25th. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Elisheba Etoup is our editor. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.